control over there, the coordinator and recorder of talk.
I'm going to have a shiur on. I know that I'm a teacher, so I have to use the board. Okay, they just relax. Okay, industrial, kashrus, and you're all welcome to hear. Without any further ado, Ravella, you're on your
shiur. I did make a few copies. I apologize if it's not enough. I have a copy. So, okay, so they asked me what to speak about. I said, you know, so we'll talk about industrial kashrus. So what exactly does that mean? I mean, lots of things. But I want to talk a little bit about some of the you know, things that are different, or, you know, things that are, you know, that we in kashrus at the OU we understand, but people not necessarily, you know, who aren't in the field of kashrus maybe aren't, you know, deal with Yoredeya, and it's the two obviously intersect a lot because we all buy foods that are made in factories and things like that. One of the most difficult ingredients that are in any product is something called flavors. Okay, so it can mean anything. You know, I remember growing up hearing that, you know, companies don't have to list all their ingredients on their labels. That's not really true. There are exceptions. There are things that don't have to be listed. There are things called processing aids. You know, for instance, if you oil the pan, that's not an ingredient that doesn't have to be listed. You know, things that if they were to smear chazer schmaltz to use to bake their bread, that wouldn't necessarily be listed as an ingredient because it's a processing aid. Okay, whatever, you know, different terms like that. But otherwise, companies basically have to list all their ingredients. But there's another rule, a law, that there are a lot of hide ingredients that they put in under the category of flavors. So, for instance, you know, you look at a bottle of Coca-Cola, right, the secret formula everyone wants to know, so it won't say it on there. They'll just say flavors, or natural and artificial flavors, or something along those lines. And then the company's basically able to hide whatever they want inside those two words, okay, natural flavors or artificial flavors. They could basically add whatever they want and say, this is our secret formula, and we don't have to share it. We just call it a flavor. This obviously has, you know, a person buys a product and it let's say it doesn't have a hechsher on it. They look through the ingredients and this comes up also quite a bit with medicines, you know, things that don't have hechsher. Even if you look through the ingredients, there's always going to be in the ingredients list something that says flavors, especially with medicines. We all know that it has this, and in most food, drinks, you know, you think candies, you know, almost every. Even cookies, pastries, things like that, they'll put into it a flavor. And these flavors are very, very powerful. They determine the whole taste of the item is by this small little amount that they put in called flavor. There are sweeteners that they put in, obviously, things like that. But if it's a grape flavor, cherry flavor, orange flavor, vanilla flavor, chocolate flavor, cocoa, coffee flavor, it's all going to be, you know, determined by this ingredient. And what is it made up of? Well, just to give another piece of information, let's say it says on a natural grape flavor, right? So this is something that people get all nervous about, especially with medicines. You'll go to the store, you know, the kid needs Tylenol, and I hear this all the time, I'm going to get the cherry flavor and not the grape one, because the grape, it says natural grape flavor, so we all know that grape is wine, it's going to be a problem of magakum. It's a problem of yainesef, stamienum. But that's not really true. The term natural flavor doesn't mean it comes from grape. It means it comes from natural sources. And though we would think, you know, natural flavor, that, you know, how do you get a natural flavor from grape? How do you get it? Except for taking it from grape. No, it's actually what we would think of as being artificially made, but it's artificially made. The flavor is not really grape flavor, but it's made from natural sources as opposed to being made from synthetic sources such as, petroleum-based synthetic things that are made from you know. So as long as it's made in a natural way, it can be called, it can be taste whatever they want it to taste like. They can call it natural grape flavor. It has nothing to do with grape. In fact, grape flavor, to get a real grape flavor, I mean, if it says something like real grape or contains juice, you know, oftentimes they'll have to write on the bottle, you'll see, it'll say 0% juice, because it'll say, you know, lemon flavored, whatever, 0% juice, because it's not really a lemon, there's no lemon in it at all, but it's misleading. So the government requires now, or whatever, you know, whatever rules they're required to write on it, that it doesn't contain any, it doesn't contain any juice. But that's the actual juice-based flavors, real flavor, you know, that come from real juice, are much more expensive. They can make these chemical compounds, and they can make them, again, either synthetically or they can make them naturally. And they're very, very, very powerful, and they're very cheap. And therefore, in a medicine or any cheap drink that you buy, or, you know, even though it'll say natural flavors, it's almost, again, you should, you know, it's always, you know, worthwhile not to take chances, but I'm just saying it's usually not an actual grape flavor. In the medicine, you don't really have much choice, but, you know, people have to buy it, but it really is no difference. In medicines, we found that even if it says natural flavors, it is not actual grape they're putting in. It is, you even certify, you know, natural grape flavors that come from natural sources, and none of them have anything to do with grape. You know, if it says artificial flavored grape, then certainly so, that has nothing to do with grape. So how do they get flavors? Well, there are different ways depending on what the flavor is. They can mix different chemicals together and sort of create different flavors. One of the things that they do, let's talk about in terms of real ingredients now, is they can concentrate things. There's a machine in a factory called a concentrator, and what it does is it will, in essence, it will boil the liquid. Let's say I want to make a grape juice concentrate, or like apple juice, or orange juice, or any other such item. It'll boil it, but it boils it at low temperatures, so it's not to ruin the taste. So they do this under vacuum. They're able to pull out the flavors from the. They're able to concentrate to remove the water from the drink. You could buy a frozen, or you could buy a syrup. And they do it that way. Well, oftentimes they will do it because it's cheaper to transport it. If I want to transport apple juice from China to America, I would rather not send the water, which could be 80% of the weight. I will concentrate and remove it, move the water, send the concentrate over here. The water will be added back in, and then I'll have apple juice. As we'll say, oftentimes, you know, it says on the bottle, concentrate from China, from Mexico, from etc. They do it because they want to transport it. They want to save money on the cost of transportation. You can send one truck instead of five trucks, or one boat instead of five boats. It's obviously going to be much cheaper. Now, part of what happens when you send things through a concentrator is that we said you remove the water. Okay, the water gets evaporated. There are certain volatile chemicals that also boil off. Okay, they're alcohols. They're not alcohols that will get you drunk, but it's a type of a chemical called alcohol, and they're lighter than water, they boil off at a lower temperature than water. So water boils at 212. Okay, so you have to, if they do it under vacuum, they can get the water to boil off at 180, 170, 150, depending on how strong the vacuum. They keep increasing the vacuum as they go, boil the water at lower and lower temperatures. And there's a whole chachma to how you do it at low temperatures and get out the water without ruining the taste. But inevitably, you're going to lose the alcohols as well. It's called the essence. Okay, it's another term for it. One of the things that, let's say you're doing a grape, you're going to lose the grape essence. So you're going to have a concentrated grape juice at the end that's going to taste like sugar water, basically. It won't have any of the tastes. Because when we think about taste of grape juice, that grape juice taste, that's a very, very small component of the grape juice. That's the flavor. Okay, the sugar and the water is the 99% of the drink. There's a small component in there which is the actual grape flavor, and that's what differentiates a grape juice from an apple juice from all different. Is that little bit of flavor, and it's an essence. Okay, so when they boil off the water, they boil off the essence as well. So then you lose all the flavor from it. You have to capture that flavor back. They have something called, in factories, something called an essence column, okay, and they, it's basically, it's a distillation process. You've boiled off the water, you're able to get it to the right temperature at which the alcohol will remain, in gas form, and the water will condense, and then so I'm able to separate out. I could fraction out, I could get different parts of that I'm looking for. Some things are more volatile, less volatile. You know, you can actually separate out different flavors from the grape, depending on using this thing called an essence column. Okay, so, and companies do this, and then they might put it back into the grape juice, if that's what they're interested in doing, if they want to sell grape juice with a good grape flavor. Or they may sell some of that essence to other companies who will use it for other purposes. They want to make let's say they want to make a natural grape-flavored, I don't know what to do with grape so much, but whatever it is, some sort of a, pastry. I don't know if you make grape-flavored pastries, but if you did, you would want to put some of that grape flavor in. You wouldn't necessarily want to put grape juice in or high amounts. They'll change, do other things to it, too much liquid, whatever. You want to use this essence, whatever they'll find the use for it. You have this concentrate. Now, this concentrated flavor, it could be, like we said, it could be 100 times stronger than grape juice itself in terms of its taste, in terms of the flavor. It's not sweet. It doesn't have the sugar part of it. It doesn't necessarily have the tartness of, they're all different components when we break down a flavor. But this is one of them we could artificially create those back. I could put in, citric acid to make it tart, and I could put in sugar to make it sweet, and I could add a little bit of this essence back in, and I could make something that tastes basically like grape juice again, as long as I rebuild the different components of what a grape juice is made of. So this is something that exists in the flavor companies. They have these different, and they do the same. What I just explained, they could do the same with almost anything. They'll do it with fish. Give you a fish flavor. It could be a concentrated fish flavor. They're all the methods that they make. I'll give it another, we think of meat, let's say, right? We learned Bas B'Challov. We know the meat is batel b'shishim. Milk is batel b'shishim, right? Cheese, batel b'shishim. Yet, you could create, separating out the moisture, separating out the sugars, even the fats, getting down to what is the flavor of this meat, I could separate that out today, they do, and they can make concentrated meat flavors, okay? And then you could buy, for instance, a little packet of rice that comes with a actual meat flavor, depending on what's in that meat flavor. Sometimes it's synthetic, sometimes it's artificial flavors. They can make artificial meat flavors, and they'll mix it in with the chicken and with the meat, and then you cook that with your rice, and it gives you a nice flavor, or you could even have natural meat flavors. Sometimes you don't know. It's a mixture of all different types. Sometimes these are kosher, right? You could buy Near East, I think, makes a chicken-flavored rice. It comes in a little packet, and it gives you the whole taste. Sometimes you could buy them, they're parv, you buy these soup mixes, they're chicken soup, but there's nothing chicken in it, right? It's all parv. And sometimes these things are treif, right? In factories, they can make, we deal with, obviously, they're not certifying it, but we now have to figure out how are we going to kasher the machines that have these concentrated forms of flavor in them? So even though in Shulchan Aruch we talk about, what is called, the term here, Navita L'taima, something very strong that's added for flavor. So today in the industry, there are all types of things that weren't necessarily discussed or considered to be a vital time so much in former times, that are, maybe we have to, reconsider how we view them. And the first item we had discussed in Shulchan Aruch, there's a simon about these halachas of vital time. The Rama says, he talks about kol isurim, anayikim isman azek, kulam misbatla b'shishim. All the different isurim that we have, the meat, the fish, right, the chicken, the whatever it is, they're all batla b'shishim. Those are b'mashu. We all know chametz b'mashu, yayin esach. If it mixes with other wine to wine is min b'minay, it has special chumras by yayin esach, it's b'mashu. Okay. And then he says, but now we have an important rule over here. there's also a tasting factor, as long as I don't taste it. Okay, aval in nois in tam, ba'isa kadeira, hu asu bitzar atzmai, if the thing itself is also bitzar atzmai, not because it got a tam from I cooked it in a chafer pot or something, made it chafer, but actually, it itself is isser, like we said, meats and fish and these type of things. Then I feel a little aleph, like bottle, because marchi magdish in taimai. If it's what we call an avila taimai, it's not bottle. Chayn melech v'tavlin, so the Ramah gives different examples, right? So let's say, how do you have isser tikka salt? A person was mishtachav, they made a vayda zara out of salt, whatever it is. Okay, tavlin, it could be tavel or different surim, or it could be truma or kalayim or kleyakerim or whatever example of tavlin of isser. Midvarim midvarim davidi l'taima. Imasur machmas asma ebetel b'shishim. So if these things are avila taima, then they're not bottle. So we have this new rule over here. Something called avila taima. The rules of shishim don't no longer apply. The Taz asks a very important question right away. He says, "Well, I was saying, what about shumen? Okay, just some animal fat. Doesn't that give a lot of taste? Isn't that an avila l'taima also? Well, you know, we just said meat, fish, and things like that are batal b'shishim. So the Taz says, he actually has a very interesting hakdam over here. He says, tzarchin lina shumen shel iser shenafa l'maichel amayyeh batal b'shishim. Why is it batal b'shishim? Halataim of it, isn't it put in for taste? You want to, like you said, a person, let's add a little bit of shuman into their rice to give it a good taste or something like that. You put it in for taste, so why is it bottled? And then he says, Bishlama shuman basar l'tok b'chol chalav. He says, I understand if you're telling me about basar and chalav. That I understand. Shaper bottle b'shishim. If we're talking about kosher meat and kosher milk, even though shuman, he says, that is exactly why. Kiva che'ina isser b'tzaratzmai rak b'tzaratzmai. It's not isser b'tzaratzmai. Okay, and the Shulchan said before, one of the rules is it has to be Yisr Machmas Atzmai. And this is only Yisr Machmas Taruvus, which is still a little hard to understand because once I mix it, it will become Yisr Machmas Atzmai. Right? That's a shayla. Have you viewed Basar B'chalav? Is it Yisr Machmas Atzmai or not? But maybe Tazalori is not Yisr Machmas Atzmai. Anyway, it's Machmas Taruvus. That's what he says. V'kivit Yeshishim ain't got Taruvus. Again, it's a little bit. So there are those that explain this Taz. People God, their mothers, they say, well, avida l'taima, going like the Shach's explanation, we'll see in a second, Shach says avida l'taima is in Issa Drabanan. Issa Drabanan, so we're not talking about Basar B'chalav of Deraisa over here. We're talking about Basar B'chalav of Drabanan. And therefore, it's like other Issuri Drabanan, like Maimid and you can raise it to Maimid, where we know from Basar B'chalav, from Taruf, from Peizayin, that if you make cheese using meat, as long as it's b'shishim, the cheese is not aser. It's, you know, remind me for meat, it's not, okay, that's the sum compared to that case over here. It says this is a drabanan also, it becomes bottle. Okay, but anyway, that's what the Taz says though, that since this is not, it's only mitzvah teruvis, as long as it's shishim, there's no teruvis. Okay, but what about shumin shalissen? That's mitzaratzmah, so why isn't that in the vidal time? That's the Taz's kasha. So then he answers in the end, I skipped a little bit here, da da da. Shuvri isi this of heter, davar nasalatam ketzer, kol davar charif, koi tavlin umeloch. It has to be something that's very, very strong. It has to be something that is like a davar charif, okay? That it's like tavlin umeloch. That's where it's not bottle. So Taz says, big mashmalay mikri tam bezel, davar charif, aloy shuman. Dav shikam hu matim amaychel mamtikai, ey nirgosh kolkach. So it's perhaps a shtickle stira in the Lashon. On the one hand, we said it has to be dafka davar charif. Okay, so the examples I gave you before, concentrated meat, concentrated fish, these aren't dvarim charifim, they're not. But then in the end, he says, no, that he doesn't really mean it. He means you're not going to taste it so strongly. Which mean is, the vila taima means it's something that has a very strong taste to it. Okay, something very strong taste, that's in a vila taima. In which case, then al-Khalami, if I were to concentrate in a way that wasn't naturally done, I could concentrate these flavors, so perhaps that should be a problem. Incidentally, I'll just give an example. This mamash just happened last week. We had a company's making has a request to make it's a beverage company, and they have a request to make a product which has a chicken flavor in it. Okay, some sort of a drink with a chicken flavor. So I don't know who wants to drink it, but it's like a drinkable soup. It's a chicken soup. But it's a drink, They asked them, they wanted to be packaged at this bottling facility, at this beverage facility. And it's a heated product. And so one rabbi in the OU looked at it and said, you know, look, on the one hand, it was about 0.75% was the amount of the powder that they put in. And he asked the company for all types of, statistics on it, you know, what's it by weight and what's it by volume and then the water and the other ingredients and what else is in there. But anyway, that's what came out. It's about 0.75% if you go volume to volume of this powder to the water that's put in. And that's it. So, okay, obviously no one's going to certify this product, but do we have to kosher afterwards? You know, so this was the question that was asked. And, actually I spoke with that. This was with Rav Schachter as well. And he said, yeah. He said the one of the interesting things they sent us was the data sheet for this, the specs for this product. And it says that that this is basically 0.75%. It's basically is the usage rate that they expect people to use this at. So that means this thing is expected to produce a chicken flavored drink at that percentage. It's not that it'll give some minimal chicken taste. It's not some very bare meat. This is, if you want a chicken flavored drink, this is the amount you're supposed to put in, and it's made from actual chicken. So Shachter said, yeah, you have to kasher afterwards. This is an avidah l'tayma. There's a discussion. Well, it's avidah l'tayma. Okay, the product is aser, but does it aser kalim as well? And Maisim Pasuk, yeah, avidah l'tayma means that. Well, why do we do extra kalim? Why do we have to kasher? Because of the tam. Because of the time of the Yisr. And this thing is the equivalent of several times its weight. So it's a heavy hitter. Right? Even though it's 0.75%, it represents really much, much more. It's we'll call it an avidah l'tayma. And even though it's not a davar charif, right? The drink is not charif, because you ate the chicken base straight, the powder should be very, very strong. Be very strong, but it wouldn't be charif. It wouldn't burn you or... wouldn't be hard to digest. It would just be a very, very intense, call it intense flavor. It's meant to be diluted at, basically 120 or 130 or whatever it is to one. That's the way the, and this is common. I mean, I'm just getting, this isn't a rare type of a thing. This is a common thing today that a lot of flavors are, which it might not even, you don't even know what's in it. It just says, on the bottle, chicken flavor or something. And, but what, how is that made? You think, okay, it's just a chicken. It's just chicken. Chicken's bought the bashishim, how bad could it be? But no, these things today could be made in ways that could be very powerful. Okay, what is the status of avidah l'tayma? So the Shach says that even though it's aser, it's aser midrabbanan. That's the he quotes this from the Yisra Heter. Avidah l'tayma d'haynu midrabbanan, and therefore he says it helps even to have you could have a kfeila taste it, even though we don't rely on kfeilas. This is an exception because it's only a midrabbanan. Okay, that's the Shita Shach. Kiveger over here goes on the Shach, and the words Haidu Drabanan, he says, well, look at the Ran. The Ran says that if you taste it, it's a Deraisa. So, okay, well, seemingly a Machlaikas Shach or Issa Beheter and Ran, seemingly a Machlaikas Rishainim, is in the Vidal time a Deraisa or Drabanan. And many understand it that way. Pasha says it's a Machlaikas. And I suppose Shachter many times about this, he feels that you should be Machma like this Ran. That it's a avidah l'tayma is a din d'oraisa, and therefore this chicken not only very chomer to eat this soup. The Aruch HaShulchan has a beautiful way of explaining this. I wouldn't call it machlekes because he tries not to make a machlekes out of it. But these two shitas of the Ran and the Issa V'Heter, he says that it depends on the level. The Shach, when he's discussing this, he's going on the words of filu be'elef loy bottle. He said, avidah l'tayma filu be'elef loy bottle. That means, even if I put in a tiny amount in, but I can still detect a tiny, normally if it would be any other iser, let's say a regular chicken would fall into my soup, fall into my, whatever, into my coffee, into my chicken, whatever it is. So if the shishu could edit it, no one says I'd never taste anything. Maybe you can, some expert kfeila could say, it changed the taste a little bit. But he won't taste chicken soup here. It's not going to taste like chicken. So, and yet, there's a special chumrah by Avila Taima. Avila Taima, not only is it, does it give taste pashishim, it's not bottle, even if you could be margish it at all. That's what the Rama says. He says, in kol's manshim agish in taimai. So they understand that means it has to be gone completely. If salt falls into your soup, let's say it was salt of avodah zarah, whatever, right? So salt falls into your soup. Batal b'shishim, obviously not, right? Shishim, 1% salt, huh? It'd be too strong to even eat this soup. You'd have to water it down more. What happens if it becomes 0.5%, 0.25%? Okay, 0.1%, that's 1 in 1,000. You'll still taste a little bit of salt in there. You'll be margish it. I feel about a fly bottle. It gets to 0.01, 1 in 10,000, you won't taste it at all. You can't differentiate between this one and any other soup. Okay, that's salt. But if it's 1 in 1,000, you're still going to taste it, but you're not going to taste the salt. You'll just taste a little bit. You'll have we call that a tam kolish. Tam kolish by other yisurim is not aser. By a davar, by a vidal time, even tam kolish is aser. For more machmer. And that's what the shach means. That's what the Arfa Shach says. That's what shach means when he says, afilu ba'alu afloi bottle. He means, afilu ba'alu afloi bottle till you get to the point of zero. Till you get to zero, it'll be asur to a button. But what happens if I put in salt at 1%? Salt at 1%? I can't even eat it. It's so salty. So extremely salty. That, says the Arfa Shach, even everyone agrees. That's the raisa. Okay, if everybody really agrees to that, not, I don't know. But he says, that's the part that the Ran would hold is the raisa. And that's he comes out like that as well. But that's the raisa. But if it's 1 in 1,000, where it's only a very minimal taste, that's a drabon. Now there's an interesting paradox, we'll call it, by following case. This is very, very common. Let's say you have, we talked about concentrated things. One of the things that's very commonly concentrated is milk. They make milk powder. Okay, in fact, a lot of products don't use milk in them, actual liquid milk. You put in it, they use powdered milk. It's much easier to use for baking and, you know, for chocolate, right? Chocolate, you know, milk chocolate, it's milk powder they put into your chocolate. So let's say they put in, let's say the chocolate has in it 10% milk powder. But milk powder is concentrated about 8 times. So really, your milk chocolate is tasting like you put in there, it's like it's 80% milk. Okay, just in terms of the taste of the milk that's in there, it's very, very strong. How do we view milk powder? So we talked about chicken, right, a strong chicken taste. What about milk powder? Very strong milk taste. Powder should be the same thing. If I have strong milk, strong taste of milk, so do I say that this also was in a vidal time, huh? So this is a shaila that's discussed by many, many Paisim. Michus Yitzchak, this could be down a little bit here, he was asked about this. He had a case where a piece of chocolate fell into a pot of soup. Okay, whatever it was. So first he says, well, okay, there's shishim keneged, how much milk powder is in it, you know, and there's shishim keneged, the milk powder. And then he says, well, wait a second, it's milk powder, it's not milk. So we have to look at this, you know, let's say they put in 20%, just to make the case even a little stronger. They put 20% milk powder into the chocolate. So it's like this piece of chocolate is like, again, using that ratio of, let's say it's concentrated by 8 times. So this chocolate, even though it's only 1 ounce of chocolate that fell in, really it's like 1.5 ounces of milk fell in, or something like that, right? It comes in a very surprising type of a din, right? Like the Taz said before, we don't have such a thing. We have milk and meat, it's always batal b'shishim. We never even find such a thing of milk and meat not batal b'shishim. And yet, that's what the Milchus Yitzchak says. He says, you have to view it according to the amount of milk powder as though it was what it represents. You know, so it's concentrated. But it's really equal to 1 ounce of chocolate, really equals 1.5 ounces of milk powder. And therefore, I mean, not milk powder, but of actual milk. And therefore, you would not need, it wouldn't be enough to just say, let's say there was 20 kazaisim, can I get that one kazayas, you know, I would have thought, oh, it's already bottled because it's such a small amount. No, not like that. It's not bottled at all. It's going to be basal chalav, and therefore the whole soup is awesome. That's what he comes out. Shlomo Zalman and Arbach and Micha Shlomo says the same thing. He has, he says over here, nearly linian afkas chalav, right? Milk powder. Okay. So first he says, if I add water to it, it's just water. That would go towards the bittle of it, whatever. It's not. I'm not recreating milk by adding water back into my milk powder. Then okay. However, what's the gay at the Basim Chalav, there I will need the cheshbin according to the strength of the milk. So if I've concentrated, I made it 8 times stronger, I will need 8 times more the volume can I get it. So what's the nafkamina that if the water doesn't count? He says, he talks about if you put the water in, you would still need to, and I'd say I cooked it with meat, I would still need to drink. I would have to eat a kezias of the milk itself, of the milk powder itself. The water itself is not basim chalav. It's not mitzdarf towards the shear of the kezias, because it's just water. But if I drank, but in terms of the that it would give tam, erchanami, it would give tam. Okay, so that seems to be pretty clear, right? The Shlomo, Nechaz Yitzchak. They both say that just like we discussed until now by the chicken and things like that, it would apply to the milk powder as well. I saw first in a Likot they bring from some of the journals they, from Shami Gross, but I think it's printed in his Sefer as well. Shevet HaKahasi is his name of his Sefer. It's printed in there. This Jew was printed over there as well about milk powder. And he says, he discussed the Shiloh with Rav Yashiv about what's the status of milk powder. And he said, no, you go according to the way it is now. You remove the water from the milk powder, okay, but it's still not an avidal taima. It's still not such a strong flavor. And therefore, the milk powder, you only have to be mevatel it, shishim keneged what it is. So if I have milk powder that falls into a pot of soup, let's say it was a quarter of a cup of milk powder falls in, I only need 15 cups to be mevatel it. Okay, that's, but then he says a very important caveat over here. He says, Mashu Aksha, v'nira devada yishlit toyma taruvis. However, you should get somebody to taste it. V'margishim atam shavasol, if you do taste it, it'll be awesome. K'dekai melon in yaridea, sirit tzadiches, like we just read, if you're magish the tam, then it's aser. Right. So when we talk about shishim being mevatel, shishim is a rule of thumb that Chazal gave us. They said we don't find things that are give tam more than shishim. If you do find things, we should discuss. What if for whatever reason this item does give tam more than shishim, it'll be aser. El talina and like a tam, but we have a right to be toila that it doesn't give tam. And therefore, you have a right to taste it too. Even though you would think it would give time, right? You should eat 60 times if it was milk. We for sure it's also. But the answer is that in truth, we wouldn't expect to give milk to give taste 60 times. We know that Chazal said you have to be Mishayer, milk b'shishim. We know milk isn't as flavorful as other things. Chazal said that there's nothing that gives taste more than botzel b'kaflut, right? That's shishim. That's the... The two foods that give the most taste one into the next is that everything else, some things maybe give taste in 20 parts, some things give taste in 10 parts, whatever the ratio is. But we don't know that things give taste in the shishim. It's a maximal. We go to the maximum every time. Every time a food falls in, we don't know how to mishire it. So you have to be mishire always the shishim. But over here, milk is not such a strong flavor. And therefore... he says you don't have to assume it gives taste if you remove the water from it and its bottle. They bring from Rav Adi Yosef also this way. There's a set of tshuvas called Micha Shmuel, Shmuel Pinchasi. He says he spoke to. He has also deals with the shaila about the Afkas Chol. He says Ulub Shalti as Mary Rav Adi Yosef. Tait Aisa Shem Yevad Im Yeshishim Af Shishim Negra Afka Bavad Sagi Your Bottle. That you only need 60 times the milk powder. So again, it's not really a contradiction to what we said before. Before we were talking about something where I put in a teaspoon of this concentrated chicken flavor into the into into the soup, into the broth, or into this drink, whatever it is, it'll taste like chicken soup. Everyone knows it'll taste like chicken soup. And that's what the company's telling us it's going to have that taste. So if the company tells us it's going to taste like it, then it's unquestionably going to be awesome. However, by milk powder, it's not a strong taste. And therefore, maybe milk powder is bottled in some lesser amount. Again, if Yashiv says, you know, medium, you know, middle of the road, you have to see over here, what does it taste like? You have to have someone taste it. You know, better probably get a non-Jew to taste it. You know, why should someone taste it? And then you say, oh, hey, this. But yeah, probably get a non-Jew. He says really big thing. If you get a yid, you know, because she has the taste.
Can I interrupt? Sure. I apologize greatly, because I know every boy here, a young man, has this question on his mind. Do you have any data on the caseinate in the Parvo whiteners, coffee whiteners? Do you happen to have any data?
So on the bottles of coffee whiteners, they'll say on them, contains 2% or less of the following ingredients, and then it'll list caseinate.
Right.
So now that gets into an interesting question, though, because like we were describing over here, the powdered milk shine.
Then you make coffee out of it.
You're making coffee with it.
So now can you have it, if, you know, with butter or
right, butter? Right. So it's a bottle in the milk.
Thank
in,
you.
In the coffee.
Okay, the floor is yours. Whatever you want to do with this.
No. It's an excellent question. So it fits very well into what we're discussing over here. If you were to say this caseinate over here, the truth is, before you get the caseinate, you could ask about cheese. Cheese is what is cheese? It is a concentrated form of milk, if you think about it. I put rennet into milk, and I separate out all the good stuff. I get out all the proteins and everything, right? And then I have what's left over is called mechalav, which according to some is only chalav to rabbanan, or some say you have to remove even a little bit more. And then you get out what's called mei mechalav, and that is still the 80% of water, which is in the milk, is being removed from the, and that has no milky taste. That's the name Mechal, that's called Rabbanan. So it's kind of a funny thing. On the one hand, cheese, we know, is bottle b'shishim. Yet, milk, also bottle b'shishim. But which has more taste, the cheese or the milk? Right? So this just goes with what we were saying before. Obviously, cheese and milk do not have the same amount of taste. Okay, if we're going to start, like we started with, describing what is taste, and you know, breaking down those taste molecules and saying which has more, and if I put it into, dissolve into something, how many parts until I don't taste it anymore? Obviously, cheese has a much stronger taste. You know, you have these aged cheeses, which, you know, very, very flavorful, you know, and people go to pay a lot of money to get a thing of cheese because it's very, a lot of flavor in them. Milk, not so much flavor, you know, you can get especially a skim milk or something, you know, it's almost like drinking water, you know. So, you know, okay, if there's cream in there, a little bit more, you know, has a little bit more flavor. But the two obviously are not equal, and yet we know the Chazal say Gvina is Baltim B'shishim, and milk is Baltim B'shishim. So, on the other hand, you know, you have something like this caseinate where they make this, it is a cheese type of product, the caseinate. Casein is the milk protein. The main one of the main, like there's basically two milk proteins in milk. There's something called whey protein, and there's something called casein, which are the two proteins in milk. But the main one they use for making cheese is the casein protein, and the caseinates that they put in are a powdered version, so it's a little bit more stronger than regular cheese. It's like dehydrating it and concentrating it. Now you have that powder. So again, it would be perhaps totally in this type of a shayla. How much flavor is in there? Do I go by that? Do I go by what it represents? Do I go, you know, or do I just say, well, it's 2%, and therefore, once I add it to my coffee, it'll always be batel b'shishim. We know that the coffee lighteners have a strong effect on the coffee, but there's a lot of ingredients in them. It's not only the caseinate, it's not the only ingredient. That's a minor ingredient. It does something to it, that, you know, it is important for the coffee, but there are parif ones that are completely parif. You know, you can buy, ones that are, have no caseinates in them, and you see they also work. You know, maybe not as well, but basically does the same basic idea. So it gets very difficult to try to balance what exactly, how much does that caseinate represent in there, etc. But let's assume that this is how Rubelsky held. He held that he held like Rav Yosef, like Rav Yashiv, and like Rav Yosef. that really milk powder, we say, is bottle b'shishim, unless it does give a strong taste. You know, again, it gets hard in the coffee to start figuring out, do I really taste it or not taste it? And what am I tasting the power of ingredients? Am I tasting the milk part of it? Tasting the caseinate part of it? But Pasha says you're not tasting the caseinate itself. It's more, has some sort of a reaction it does. It does something to remove the bitterness of the coffee, whatever it does, but it's not. So Rubelsky actually was asked about this question that you're bringing up about the caseinate in the coffee liners. And he held that you cannot drink it with meat. Okay, so to serve it at the meal, that would be a problem, because then you're being mevatel isser. You're mixing milk into food to eat together with meat. And during the meal, that's an isser. There's still meat in your mouth, we assume, during the meal, until you do kinuach v'adacha, until you end the meal and clean out your mouth in some way. So we assume you're going to be eating the milk with the meat itself, and therefore you're not allowed, that's a form of bitul isser l'chachila, to mevatel meat, to mevatel milk, to eat together with meat. However, he held that if a person already benched, he already finished the meal, he benched, let's say it's an hour after the meal, let's just make an hour so to get out of the problems of kinuach v'adacha, right, assuming that if you wait an hour, that substitutes. So then, you can drink the coffee, and it's not being mevatel isser, he said, because there's no isser. It's not isser. It's heter being mevatel, and the fact that I have to wait 6 hours, that's not an isser. That's a chiyav on the gavra. He said, not a chiyav on the. It's not an isser on the chef. There's nothing wrong with drinking the milk. It's just that there's a chiyav of hamtana. Especially for Ashkenazim, where the 6 hours is really mitam minik. The Roma paskins, for those who learn Bess of Bechalov, know that the Roma really paskins that it's enough to wait an hour or to even to, like a bit of time, even to bench, and then mikra din. But we have a minik. We have a minik that we wait, that Ashkenazim wait 6 hours for Sardin. So there's really more mikra din that they have to. But I don't think it makes a difference. I think Rubalski held the same for Sardin as well, that they're allowed to, because it's not an isser on the food. There's no isser on the mevatel isser to eat it with meat, to mix it with, not mixing it with meat. It's only a chiyav on the person, a chiyav on the gavra, and therefore he held that that's not called bitul isser anymore, and you are allowed to. So that was his, but I was just pointing out, it's not 100% so pashut. It's dependent on a lot of these topics that we are touching on over here. How do you view concentrated items that give more flavor than their punch? You know, again, in a coffee, it probably isn't much of a shiloh, because you know, if it would be 2%, it's obviously bottled. If it would be 10%, it would still be bottled. You know, a whole cup of coffee, you put one teaspoon in, you know, even, you know, it's it becomes, the amount of caseinate that's in there is so small, it gets into the, you know, it becomes what we talk about, bittul be'ala, fil be'ala, you know. Every year, it's not that strong of a taste that you're going to say about this, that it's an avida l'taima. But by, you know, certain things, like you said, maybe they are.
You just saved many second sages on
the place of your lunch. Yeah, as long as you already benched and ended the meal, again, probably be good to wait.
Twice a week.
Twice a week.
And this 3 hours say that every afternoon.
So you put in the milk and your coffee creamer, yeah. So, as long, you should just check, make sure it says on it, it's in the under 2% section. Most of them do, I think, what's it called? What's the popular one?
International Blight?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think it says on there. What? Coffee meeting. Yeah. It says on there. Yeah, okay.
You mentioned that according to Sfardim, and maybe a little more chumra for the 6 hours to make it in.
Yeah.
Is it possible that Sfardim, the whole question doesn't start because that's in the chaber, that you can have a list of the banks of the
Rabbanah? Not sure. Maybe.
Be mice if you can't be waffle me in Karo.
Because he'll say that it's already mixed in, it's only 2% of it, so now I'm just adding on more onto it. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's what the Chaber meant by being mice, you know. Not sure. It's you know, maybe it's more chomer, it's like a davashesh matirin. You could eat it. Don't have to eat the fleishiks. He's talking about being maisif because it's iser. You made your soup aser. A little bit of gvina fell in, but gresakum, whatever. It's a drabanim. So you're being maisif on the drabanim. The vatla, so you could eat it to save the day. Here, so don't eat it with fleishiks. Eat it after 6 hours. So it's, Sometimes we're more machmer on that. We call that, you can say that like a davar sheish lamatirin. I don't know exactly how to start the pasuk, but the Ramah in Kufches, I don't know if you got the Kufches, about the bread, if it was, we got Recha, we hold Recha la Nosa, the pasuk is like the Rif, that we shouldn't eat it with milchiks, if you have other bread, because you should save it for a different time, because it's like a davar sheish lamatirin. Even though we're not really machmer, davar sheish lamatirin, no question why the Ramah is machmer over there by the bread. But, yeah. Anyways,
In terms of the suffix, he discusses suffix waiting 6 hours in general. He says not that rotation again. He goes like another view that's like an activity. It's not called an issue.
Okay, because if I want to eat it now, I can't eat it later. That type of svara. Okay. So different ways of looking at it. So maybe even for svara. Anyways, he was mako for svara too. I believe so. I don't think he made any chilek. I think as he said, it's a din in the gavra. Din on the gavra is a little more chumer. But you're right, maybe other reasons for Sfarad would be more calm. Just one other thing I wanted to... I don't know how much more time I have. Am I over time already?
Anyone that wants to leave can leave. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, there's one last thing I want to discuss is, so we talked about Avida L'Taima, and we said that you have to cast your kelim from it. Because kelim are Nesinas Tam. And the whole idea over here is Nesinas Tam. So it doesn't matter that it's bottle b'shishim, as long as it keeps giving time, it'll be awesome. We're afraid in the next part they cook it there, it might be a nice time into it. However, the Prima Gadim, you might be familiar with this, he says it a few times, and others quote this Prima Gadim, he says that once you get past shishim, you don't say chaticha nasas nevela. Okay? This would be more important for Ashkenazim, again, for Sfaradim, the hold of chaticha nasas nevela by Shari Surim. But let's say the case I discussed before with this chicken flavored drink that someone made, which has in it about less than 1%, 0.75% of chicken flavor. We are going to assume that the kelim are osir. We assume you have to kasher, but we're not going to say chaticha nasas nevela on this drink. So what's the afkamina? So one very important afkamina would be: do you have to wait 24 hours before you kasher the kelim? For Ashkenazim, you have a problem always. If I kasher ben yoimai, I just trafed up the water that I kashered it, I used for the kashering. Right? Because unless I'm able to kasher with shishim times, right, if it's just one little spoon, so make it in, you can kasher it then by dropping it to a large vat of water that has shishim times a spoon, you could kasher it even ben yomo. Okay, Rama brings as a minig not to kasher ben yomo even when you can. Because we're afraid people will make mistakes, shadow whether it applies to shishim or not. But let's say Rama says not to do it even by basar or chalav, even though it's a terrible one, you could be kasher ben yomo. They say not to do it, Rama, in Tafnan Beis. And Hilchas Galus Kelim over there says it's a minute to always wait because we don't want people confusing. Now, so I'm not talking about mitam the minute, I'm talking about mikra din though. Can you kasher when it's a ben yomo? So by Yisr, you can't, because unless I have a pot that shisha times the size of my pot, which obviously you're not going to have. It's not going to happen. But in a factory, they have these large kettles. I could actually kasher this kli as a ben yoimo over here because we don't say chaticha nasas nevela. If you don't say chaticha nasas nevela, then when I put the water, it'll give the tam into that water, but it'll dilute it. Whatever goes back in, if I don't say chaticha, now I have down from one part we said whatever, it's 0.75% in the first drink to dilute it now 100 times more in the next drink. So it'll be now won't even be a nice thing time at all if I had to worry about all the walls, all the bleas in the wall of the kli, so then I never have shishin times the walls of the kli, or I almost never. But if I'm only worried about a small, tiny amount, this 0.75%, this tiny amount of that's in there, so then even though it was a nice thing time, but it wasn't a nice in time, the equivalent of shishim time, right? It's a minor. So then it would be enough. So again, each case you have to look at. But if some of it falls into the next item, I don't know if shishim times it. Again, it would be mutter because we're not saying that this drink is equal to 100% chicken. We're saying it's equal to it's equal to only to a chicken soup. So it's like a few percent chicken or whatever. It would be possible to revattle it in these different ways. Okay, that's basically what I wanted to cover. Anybody has questions? Yeah, sure.
Just a side topic. I know with like Oreos on it has like dairy equipment on it. But I just wanted you to speak to like how dairy equipment works and like are certain things.
Right, sure. So, so some products will actually, you will write on them DE. Other products, they're just mepharsim. You call up, and they'll tell you that if they're dairy or dairy equipment. And dairy equipment just simply means the same thing it would be mean at your house. Nobody kasher the kelim, the milchik the kelim. Are they ben yomo or ain't a ben yomo? It could be either way. So there's no rule about that. I mean, it's possible that it's a ben yomo, but it's very possible that it's ben yomo. For instance, let's take Oreo cookies, for example. Not that I know exactly what goes on, but Oreo cookies is made in 100 different factories in America. There are factories in America that actually only make Oreo cookies. They're owned directly by Nabisco. They have a line over there just churning out their cookies all day long, and those are actually pyro. Unfortunately, unless a person knows the plant code and the date and this, that's not something that we do. A lot of the cookies are made all over the place in the other factories. The way it works today in manufacturing is, I have a factory that makes my own stuff, and I give it out to 20 other places because. Sometimes during the year, holiday season, whatever it is, we need, our capacity is now this much. We need, this many cookies. Summertime, we're going to need a huge amount of cookies. Come February, March, we don't need so many cookies. So it's not kedai for me to, it's more kedai to give it out to different factories to make it for me, my excess. When I run, I got a big order, I need it filled. I don't want to have empty bakeries running idle. Instead, I call up my, this other company that works with me, and they have my recipe, and they have my the machinery to make my cookies for me, and I'll tell them I want an order, and like this, I can fulfill a huge order very quickly because I don't have to only rely on my own factory. Now, these other factories, though, can be making dairy cookies, or they can be making, ben yarima, it could be, so, in the case of Oreos, it's the same oven belt, the same pans, the same whatever it is that's being made to that's making the power of cookies, or it's quote unquote power of, is also making butter cookies. Okay, so the equipment is milchik, and therefore we tell people it's dairy equipment, and this applies to so many items today. A lot of the drinks, your soy milk and things like that, they're made in the same places that make actual milk. And therefore, they say, they're listed D or DE, because the equipment that's used to make them is making, and some of them are making treif as well. It has to be kashered, and, you shouldn't assume, I saw this type of, similar looking product or something, must be, if it doesn't have the hechsher on it, it shouldn't be assumed to be kashered. You could have very easily, they could be making chicken broth. It's a common thing to be made on the same equipment that makes soy milk. Again, a lot of the companies don't want to kasher from dairy to parif, to parif to dairy. It's not worth their time. And they're okay with just writing dairy on it. And therefore, we tell people it's dairy, but if they want to know if it's just dairy equipment or not, we tell them. And then, nafkamina is, obviously you don't eat it with meat. You don't eat Ashkenazim. Don't eat things that are dairy equipment together with meat, but you can eat it after meat. So a person wants to eat their Oreo cookie for dessert, they can, but they shouldn't eat it at the same time as they shouldn't make a cook it with meat or put it on a plate together at the same time eating a sandwich, eating a cookie. They shouldn't do that.
Can someone assume that such a product is DE if there are no milk ingredients?
So, like I mentioned before, one of the ingredients that is very problematic in terms of knowing what's in there is if it has flavors. Sometimes it's kind of obvious that there's nothing dairy in it. It's a, it's a cherry-flavored soda, okay, it probably wouldn't be labeled dairy anyway, but like, these type of things, they're not necessarily putting any dairy in it. But it's not always so clear. Strawberries goes very well with strawberries and cream, And even the flavors could be a strawberry and cream-flavored flavor, and they'll make a cookie called strawberry-flavored cookie, and they'll use a strawberry cream flavor, and they put there's actual dairy in those flavors. So, you know, it's sort of, you know, buyer beware. You know, if you want to make the decision on your own that there is no lean dairy in there, it's pretty obvious. Okay, you know, again, you know, people are, you know, they can make their own, you know, try to figure out. If there's anything in there questionable, such as flavor, it's, you know, you could do is you could call the OU, and the OU gives out that information as to whether there's actual dairy in there. You could email, you know, a lot of people don't want to be on the phone for, you know, whatever it is, whatever the weight is. You could email the OU. If you're not familiar, it's kosherq@ou.org. You know, this is one of the things that there's someone in full-time who answers these type of questions. What about the ices? What about this cookie? What about this, you know, sorbet? Is it really parif? Yeah.
There's like a soy milk, and it comes in two different types of carton, and one of them you've noticed has like a plain OU,
yeah,
and the other one has an OUD.
Okay.
Could you assume that they're different plants?
Yes,
or?
They're probably different plants. That's probably the case. And it's not surprising that if it's a different size, anything different, it can be made different size of the country. It's very common. You know, for whatever reason, this company, this plant is set up for 16-ounce packaging, and that's what they do. And, oh, you want 24-ounce? We don't do that here. You got to go to a different place. You know, it seems crazy, but that's what it is.
Sometimes I've seen on an individual carton of almond milk, one side will say dairy, and another side will say OUD, DE, dairy equipment.
I'm sorry, on the same carton?
On the same carton of milk, one side will say dairy, and then it will say dairy equipment. On the other side of the bottle.
Okay, that's strange. I can't answer that. Why? You know.
They have a copy sign on it.
It's probably a mistake. It's probably dairy equipment, but it's probably old packaging where they originally said dairy, and then someone was told they could now write dairy equipment, and they started putting that on. I forgot to take off the dairy from the other side. But, there's usually not dairy in these soy milks. The whole idea of soy milk is to be, for people that are a little allergic and things. So it's kind of... Those are a little bit easier to say, you know, with some degree of confidence, there's probably no actual dairy in them. But still, you want to, you know, personally, I would definitely recommend every case, sending the OU an email. If there's something confusing like that, especially let us know, because it's obviously a mistake. It can't be both DE and D and dairy. It's probably an old font that, graphics that they're using. And someone in the place just doesn't understand. And, you know, they think that these are two good symbols to use. So they...
If they were hiding dairy ingredients in the flavors, would it say in the allergy?
It could, but not always, because not every... just like not every wheat product is an allergen. Gluten, you think, oh, there wouldn't be any wheat, and, you know, they have to be warn you about it or something. But it's not true. I mean, alcohols, for instance, not dairy here, but alcohols can be made from wheat, and there's no allergen necessary. Wheat alcohol, it has no gluten in it, it's gluten-free. It's anyone who has a wheat allergy would not be susceptible to it. That's why it comes Pesach time, right? Everyone gets all nervous about alcohols and things. But it's not enough to just look at an allergen warning, because there are forms of the dairy which aren't necessarily allergens. It's uncommon with dairy, but just an example, you can make alcohol out of lactose, okay? And there are places that do. They make it, so if you have dairy alcohol, it's a funny thing. But it wouldn't be an allergen. It would not be, even people who are lactose intolerant, the sugars are all eaten up. They're eaten up by these microbes, and they're all converted into alcohol. There's no dairy left in there, and it's distilled and everything, so it's completely innocuous. They could call it vodka, but yet it's dairy. So again, that's an uncommon example, but it's not, the two don't always have to be equivalent. Allergens refer to things that are allergens. They don't refer to what we halakhically call dairy. Again, by the case of dairy though, it's probably very unlikely that there's dairy in there if it's not listed. There is something dairy though called, I think it has the butter flavor. It could be the steak also, but with a P, I think. I'm forgetting the word right now. It's a very, very strong dairy flavor. It's used as a butter flavor. And they make it from, it's a distillation from milk. I don't think there's any allergen issue with it either, but it's certainly would go into the category of Revival Taimel. I mean, this stuff is used, look at the word right now. Anyway, it's used in, you know, in, on the parts per million level. They'll add it to, you know, popcorn and things like that. You know, there's synthetic versions of it. You can buy those synthetic, you know, those fake popcorns that taste like butter, you know, usually dyed with some yellow or something, and then, you know. But you could get actual dairy ones of that too. They can make it from actual distilled milk. And it's, so, the, you know, it depends on what it is. It's not always, it's not 100% to say, whenever there's no allergen, it's always going to be, it's always just going to be kalem. But it's probably 99% true. Okay.
If you have soy milk that says on the bottle, like, dairy-free, not part of that, just...
Yeah, I would think it's true.
It
they're
says
not,
OUD.
Yeah, it's almost guaranteed to be a dairy equipment thing. It's very, very common by soy. As I was saying before, these things are made on the same equipment as milk. They sanitize it very well. They clean it, you know, it's from their point of view, they have no problem bottling it on the same equipment. But it's the same boxes that they use, the same equipment, are used for milk and are used for the soy milk, almond milk, also oat milk, which becomes a chametz issue. So for Pesach time, that's why it becomes difficult getting, even for people who are not, you know, want to get almond milk or something. It's hard to find a good almond milk because it's made on the same equipment that makes oat milk. But I would say in that case, they're not putting any dairy in. They have no reason to. And we know why it says dairy on it. It says dairy because they made it on the same equipment. So it's almost guaranteed that that's the case. But again, you know, I might as well send it to the OU. They'll get an answer quickly.
Does OU still give out DE?
They do DE. They do. On certain items, like soy milk. It depends on the company. Some companies are willing to do DE. They want that. Other companies, they don't understand it, whatever. They want, they're just interested in DE. They're not interested in doing DE. So, you know, the OU doesn't require them to do a DE. They don't require it.
But sometimes it is exclusively DE, even though it says DE. Your equipment is just, I guess, like, the cost,
correct.
Like, it's not worth it.
The company is not interested in having, you know, whatever. They just want it right, D.
Even if it's, like, everything's
DE. Correct. Even though it's clearly DE, it's clearly just Kalem. Sometimes the company, you know, you can try convincing them, whatever, you know. But, you know, it's just not, they don't understand it, so. Okay.
Great. Yeah, thank you. Okay.
Oh, you appreciate my,
Yeah.